We're in 1 Timothy chapter 5 this morning. We began it a little bit. We started to cover the first two verses, I believe, Wednesday night, or last Sunday. So, just, you know, going back our overview here, we're in the second part. We can kind of divide 1 Timothy into two sections here, two main sections anyway. And we're down to the dealing with other people, basically. Instructions on how to deal with others. The first couple of verses was talking of chapter 5 was talking about how to do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father, younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters, with all purity. So just how Timothy was to deal and how we are to deal with other members of the church around us and people in general. So today we're going to try to cover verses 3 through 16. And this has a lot to do with our dealing with widows. Widows in need, widows indeed. So, if you look at this chapter, it jumps around a little bit. It talks about, these are kind of the six groups of people that are talked about in this section here, verses 3 through 16. First, in verse 3, we're talking about widows indeed, and we'll get into that a little bit later, what it is. Verse 4, widows, still we're talking about widows, but these are widows that have relatives, that have some family around. Verses 5 and 6, you see that there's some widows that, it talks a little bit more about the widows indeed, but it kind of contrasts them with the widows that are living in pleasure of the world. Verse 16 kind of talks about Christians in general, their duties toward the relatives, toward these widows in general. Verses 9 and 10, number 5 on the list, you see here, it jumps back and starts talking about these widows indeed again. It gives them more qualifications or requirements for them to be considered this. And then the latter half of the chapter really focuses in on the younger widows. So overall, the care of 3 through 16, the care of widows and relatives. But this whole chapter in general, I think even Wednesday night, we'll talk about the treatment of elders. So this whole chapter is dealing with other people, just how to deal with other people. So let's jump in. I'll read 3 through 16 just to give us a refresh our memories on what it's talking about here. Verse 3, it says, honor widows who are really widows. But if any widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show piety at home and to repay their parents. For this is good and acceptable before God. Now she who is really a widow and left alone trusts in God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. But she who lives in pleasure is dead while she lives. And these things command that they may be blameless. But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the family and is worse than an unbeliever. Do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number, and not unless she has been the wife of one man, well reported for good works, if she has brought up children, if she has lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work. But refuse the younger widows, for when they have begun to grow wanton against Christ, they desire to marry, having condemnation because they cast off their first faith. And besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not. Therefore, I desire that the younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house, give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully. For some have already turned aside after Satan. If any believing man or woman has widows, let them relieve them, and do not let the church be burdened, that it may relieve those who are really widows. Okay, so all the way back to verse 3. Starts off, honor widows who are really widows. What do you think this word honor first to here? What do you think of when you think of honor? Respect? Holding someone in high esteem? What other connotation, or what other thing does it mean in this context? Provide for them, right? I think we can see that sometimes it does involve financially or temporal support that we're talking about here. And you can kind of see if you look over to, so it says honor widows here, and it goes on to we'll discuss all the requirements that have to be met for the church to honor these widows, to financially support them. But also if you look in verse 17 of this same context, when it starts talking about the elders, it says, let the elders who rule well be counted worthy of double honor. So, and that's the same word here. We also know that that section is talking about that elders can also be supported financially if they need, if need is there. So, if you look at the word honor, you also see in Matthew 15, 4 through 6, in that section there, just thinking about this word honor, and its meaning in this context. You know, Matthew 15, what is Jesus doing here in this section? Matthew 15, 4 through 6. He's talking to the scribes and Pharisees, and what have they been doing? Right. They've been, you know, verse 2 of Matthew chapter 15, it says, why do your disciples transgress the traditions of the elders, for they do not wash their hands when they eat bread. And Jesus comes back and says, why do you transgress the commandment of God because of your tradition? For God commanded, saying, honor your father and mother, and he who curses father and mother, let him be put to death. But you say, whoever says to his father and mother, what profit you might have received from me is a gift to God, and he need not honor his father or mother. Thus you have made the commandment of God of no effect in tradition. But you see here that this word honor, honor your father and mother. You know, we had one of the Ten Commandments, right? All the way back to Exodus 20, verse 12, Deuteronomy 5, 16, talks about honoring your father and your mother. This honor here, you can see in Matthew 15, the Pharisees and the scribes were taking their money, and they were, from what I read, they were dedicating this to God, and then they were saying, well, we've dedicated this to God, so we can't help out our father and mother. We don't have the money to do that now. We're using this money. We've made a vow to use this money in other places. So they were binding traditions is what Jesus was reprimanding them about here. But you can see that word honor meant to financially support, to do whatever you needed to do to your father and mother to give them the respect and to help them out. And it also, going back to 1 Timothy chapter 5, so honor widows who are really widows. So I think a lot of versions say who are widows indeed. And we'll get into some criteria for that a little bit later, some of the things that fits that definition, the certain requirements that the widows had to meet to be truly widows indeed. Verse 4 it says though, but if this widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show piety at home and to repay their parents, for this is good and acceptable unto God. So, you can kind of see here, the first responsibility is who? What? Children, grandchildren. I think some versions I was reading say nephew there, but that I think that term is just translated grandchildren in most versions, I believe. So just family in general. But I think you can kind of see that in most cases it is a child or a grandchild who would be the first in line to take care of a widow or a family member in need. So what does to show piety mean? Showing reverence to God. It's showing a reverence to someone who, towards anyone whom dutifully regard as due is what I found it as a definition. So it's someone who is due reverence, and you're just going and showing, you're doing what it takes to show them that reverence. But the key word I thought there is it's due. So these widows, you know, they if you think about it, the way that this is set up almost, that God set this up, if she is indeed a widow, it suggests that such relief that's to come to these widows is not to be dealt to them as paupers or some lower class. You know, you think of a beggar or somebody like that, oh, we're helping these people out. But that's not the way you're to treat these widows. It's not in a degrading manner of any kind. But you're to treat them as to Christians. Treat them like Christians who the church holds in high esteem. Or holds a place of honor, if you will. So, you know, they may be in need, but just because they're in need doesn't mean they're a lower class citizen or something like that. These people have lived a good life, as we'll see in a few minutes, and they deserve this honor, and they need your help, and need our help in some cases, and you to help them in a way that honors them. Does that make sense? And who are the, you know, we've already said the first people is the children. The last point, they repay their parents. You know, you think about all of these, just parents in general, not just widows, if you think about it, what all the parents have done for children when they were growing up. It's impossible to think about everything that a parent does for a child when they're raising that child. And it's the responsibility of the children, of course, when they get older, as we've already looked at. Even the Ten Commandments, all the way back from the beginning, honor your parents, honor your father and mother. So children are to repay their parents the debt they owe as far as possible for their kindness. And this is a debt that can never be repaid in full, but children should feel glad for the opportunity and do as much as possible to care for their parents. Because this is not only a privilege, but it's also acceptable to God, as you can see in the last part of verse 4 there. Anybody got any comments over the first couple of verses there? Oh, exactly. Definitely. Right, yes, we do. We see a lot, Freddie was saying, we see a lot of cases today where parents do not take care of their children and that this is a commandment. It's not just Paul or God giving us an option to do this. And I think we'll see as we keep reading here that it's very serious. You know, some of the language he uses a little bit farther down, people who don't take care of these people are denying the faith and using some strong language to condemn them. Okay, so then verse 5, we kind of see describing some of the differences in the widows and how they are living, I guess, in that day and age and today. Verse 5 says, "Now she who is really a widow and left alone, trusts in God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day." So here you have this widow who is living a godly life. She's really a widow. She's left alone. A lot of versions there, I think, say desolate. You can just imagine being by yourself. You have no support around you. And I think that it is just putting emphasis on the fact that the person has no one to help take care of them. They're desolate. They're left alone. Trust in God. The commentary I read said that the word here in the Greek is in the perfect tense, which implies that a past completed process having present results. So it's something they've been doing and they're still doing and the results are still ongoing now. So this trusting in God is something that they've been doing for a long time. They're still doing and you're seeing the results of that. And if you think about it, this person who has no one to take care of them, this widow, who else will they turn to? Who is the one person, the one being to turn to if you have no one else to take care of you, to help? They're going to put their trust in God. They're going to rely on God for their needs. Her hope isn't in God is a habit of life, an immovable trust. Continues in prayers and supplication. We've already talked about the difference between prayer and supplication, but this is someone who knows they got to put their trust in God, and they're speaking with God on a continual basis, because that's how they're communicating their needs to God. All these things, living alone, desolate, trusting God, continuing in prayer and supplication, imply that she has no one to look to but God. The lack of others leads her to feel the dependence on God. I think it's kind of what this verse is describing, the type of widow that this verse is describing. Now if you jump to verse 6, you see another option, I guess, if you will, for a person in this case. But she who lives in pleasure is dead while she lives. So living in pleasure identifies one who's kind of living for themselves, the pleasures of this world, doing things to feed, fulfilling bodily appetites, eating, drinking, demanding the niceties of life. You can see the sharp contrast between verse 5 and verse 6 in these type of widows here. And the one who is living for pleasure and not relying on God, not putting her trust in God, is dead while she lives. So she's physically alive, but spiritually dead. So, and you can see that from Ephesians 2:1, how if we're living in sin, our spiritual life is dead. Ephesians 2:1, dead in trespasses and sin. Colossians 2:13 is another passage. It says, you being dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, he has made alive together with him. So you can see how if we're living in sin, we are spiritually dead. And that's the way this he's describing these widows that live for pleasure instead of trusting in God and living. Any questions, comments on that? A couple of verses. Right. Moving on to verse 7 here. Now we kind of jump. You know, verse 7 it says, and these things command that they may be blameless. So these things, what do you think that these things is referring to? What? What he's just talked about. I think it may even mean the things he's about to talk about too. I think it's just covering the whole context here. These things command that they may be blameless. So these things that I've just talked about supporting widows, how the widows ought to live, the things that I'm about to tell you about the younger widows and how you're to financially support the widows indeed. You know, you need to command these things. You need to, these teachings must continually be taught to the entire church, the entire congregation, to keep the church pure in doctrine and practice and make sure that we're preparing, not pampering to the idleness and those able to take care of themselves. So, in doing so, we can be found blameless. We'll be pleasing and acceptable to God. And then, in verse 8, he's talked about these widows, their needs that they have. But then in verse 8, he jumps into the ones that are not doing what they're supposed to do, the people that are supposed to take care of them. And if you don't take care of them, if you don't fulfill your responsibility, you know, how bad you are, you know. But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So, there were some people there, Freddie's already talked about, there are a lot of people today that are not fulfilling this role. They're not doing this job that God, this commandment that God has given us to provide for His own. I think in this context, it is speaking about taking care of the widows of your family. If you have widows in your family, you're the first line of action here. You're the ones who are supposed to be taking care of them. And look how serious not doing this is. It says not doing this is denying the faith. I think the faith here is what he's talking about, the gospel. It's the commandments of God. It's the, you can see from other passages like Jude 3 and Acts 6 and 7 where faith and the gospel and the commandments are used interchangeably. So, You're denying the gospel of Christ. You're disobeying the gospel of Christ if you're not providing for your own. And he uses the fact that even unbelievers, even the people that don't know or adhere to God's law, they may not even know anything about it, but they still have that almost innate ability, innate desire to take care of their own family. It's something that's almost built into us in a way that, hey, you know, we're supposed to do this. We shouldn't even have to have God's law to tell us to take care of our family, I think is the way of what he's saying here. But the fact is that these people had to be told, so I'm thinking there were some situations that, there was a lot of situations that people weren't taking care of their family members and widows. And I think, we've already seen, you know, what's another case where we've learned about some widows that were in need that were not being taken care of like they should? Acts 6, right, the Grecian widows, right? So, I mean, this is a big thing back in this day. And I think I had some notes somewhere that how a lot of the people think that, you know, if you think about the situation back in those days versus today, especially in this country, but back in those days, the widows, if you were a widow back then, you were very much in need, most likely. If you didn't have any family or anyone to provide for you. Whereas today, especially living in this country, there's ways to get support, there's ways to get food through the government services and things like that. But that didn't exist back then. If you were a widow back then and you couldn't, you know, you were old enough where you maybe had a hard time working or doing anything, you were solely dependent on someone else. You couldn't provide for yourself at all. So, if you didn't provide for your own, especially those of your household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Anybody got any comments or questions on that? Exactly right. And what Brother Lambert was saying was that apparently the Jews in Acts chapter 6 were, the Jewish widows were being taken care of, but the Grecians were not, so they appointed a set of, you know, special men to make sure that those needs were met. Okay, so now in verse 9, we start getting these requirements of the widows that the church can take in, if you will, because it says, in verse 9, do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number. What does taken into the number mean? What is that? Okay, it was considered for one that was in need and that support could be given, right? Enrolled. Yeah, I saw that in a lot of the versions. So they were... Right. And what Scott was saying there, if you didn't hear, was that this is the only group of people that we have in the scriptures that the church is authorized to give ongoing support for needs like this. You know, if you think about how a lot of the places, even Churches of Christ, they call themselves Churches of Christ, how they use their money today and some of the things, activities they use their money for to support other people. This is the only one that we have that authority for on an ongoing basis. Now, I've got a few points here about benevolence. And yes, there are cases. If you look in Romans 15 and 1 Corinthians 16 and 2 Corinthians 8, you see where the saints took up a collection to send to the needy Christians in Jerusalem when that famine was going on. So we have cases of like one time here and there support benevolence to help the needy saints. It's always helping saints. It's never helping non-Christians. But this is this implies an ongoing effort here for these widows that are going to need support continuously. Okay. All right. Well, good deal. Exactly. It is because it is. These are some very, very specific requirements here. So let's look at them. You know, first we see 60 or older, the wife of one man, well reported for good works. I think that implies, you know, her reputation is what a life of a Christian should be. She's good works denotes all kinds of good actions that require, and these good works are required of all of us. So this lady, this widow is just letting her light shine so that they can see her good works. If you think about Matthew 5 and verse 16, has raised children. A lot of people, you know, say that this kind of implies that it's a well-behaved child. They didn't just have children, but they actually raised a child, and it's someone that would be a credit to her and not a burden to her. Lodge strangers. She must be hospitable, must have shown she had hospitality in her life. This, you know, hospitality is required of elders and of all Christians. In 1 Peter 4:9 and Hebrews 13:2, you see that the requirement of all Christians to be hospitable. Wash the saints' feet. Of course, what is this? We've kind of covered this a lot this year. It's an act of service when our focus on serving others. So washing the feet in this day and age would have been a great service because of the way they traveled and things like that. So just the willingness to serve others, I think, is the idea here in that requirement. Relieve the afflicted. Notes I saw said, you know, it shows a sympathizing spirit, one who is ready to relieve those in distress. And then finally, diligently followed every good work. So that is kind of extends the list of good works already specified to include anytime you've had an opportunity to do good, you've done good. So, like Freddie mentioned, this is a very specific list, and this, you don't see a lot that meet this requirement. Right, they're not optional. Exactly. They're specified requirements. Anybody got any comments or questions on that? So these are the ladies, the widows that the church is able to enroll, take in, and to provide this ongoing support to help these women out. Huh? Right, that's a good point. If you didn't hear what Al said, is that this type of lady, if you look at these requirements, is someone who has always done good for others. It's a humble person. It's someone who's not going out there seeking to get this support from the church, but she has always been willing to help others, but she just comes into this time of need, and you know, the church can help her out. It's not that she's out seeking this. Right, that's true. Right. Yeah. She's totally alone, dependent on God and the church. Okay, so moving on to the next section is talking about the ones we just mentioned you can take in, but verse 11, but refuse the younger widows, for when they have begun to grow wanton against Christ, they desire to marry, having condemnation because they have cast off their first faith. So, refuse the younger widows. I think that implies, you know, from what we've read, under 60, probably, you have to be 60 to be taken in, but refuse the young one, anyone under 60, I think it implies. Refuse basically means do not add them to this list. Do not enroll these women. Why? Why does he list? What are the reasons he gives us? Right, they'll want to get married again. They will, when they have begun to grow wanton, or wax wanton, I think is what some versions say, against Christ. That, what I read, that seems to imply that they will kind of surrender themselves over to a carnal and luxurious course of life, as opposed to what we just read about someone who's kind of turning their life over to God, putting all their trust in God. In the younger widows will likely have a lack of maturity and patience and the power of restraint in some of these situations that these older ladies had. They will have that desire to marry. That's not a condemnation of wanting to marry or them getting married again. It's just the fact that you don't take these ladies in because they will want to get married again. And in fact, you go down to verse 14, he wants the younger widows to get married. Paul encourages that. The having condemnation for casting off their first faith. I think these are the ones that have yielded to the temptations mentioned, the waxing wanton against Christ. And thereby, because they've yielded to those temptations, they have sinned, they have transgressed God's law, and because of that, they have condemnation. And if you read down in verse 13, and besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not. So, you can kind of picture this in your mind, a lady out there who has no family around, maybe, and she's gotta have something to keep her time occupied. So you can see this temptation of going from house to house, trying to, you know, this idle talk, this trifling, silly talker is what one commentary I read referred to this, to indulge in empty and foolish talk. Of course, you know what a busybody is, someone who's, they don't have enough time, they're not busy enough themselves, so they've got to get in other people's business to keep themselves busy. And I think Paul is saying that this is one of the largest temptations for a widow in this situation, because they have so much, they have this time on their hands, so they have that temptation to fill it with these type of things, to gossip, to get into other people's business, and to having this idle talk. And because of this, you know, in verse 14 it says, you know, it's kind of giving an opportunity to the adversary to speak approachfully. These things will lead to. But verse 14, instead of falling into this temptation, Paul says, therefore I desire that the younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house, and give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully. So instead of wandering from house to house, Paul said, I would that you would marry again and fulfill those roles and jump back into those roles that God has given the women and the mothers. The God-given role and duties of women. Any comments, questions? In verse 14. And finally, he says, for some have already, in verse 15, for some have already turned aside into Satan. So apparently some people had already yielded to this temptation. Some had fallen into this trap, if you will, and turned aside into Satan. But something that was happening. It's not just a warning of things that would never happen. This had already been happening in that day and age, and I'm sure it happens a lot today. In verse 16, he kind of goes back and repeats who's responsible for a lot of these things. If any believing man or woman has widows, let them relieve them, and do not let the church be burdened, that it may relieve those who are widows indeed. So he kind of throws it back on us as Christians, men, women. If you have a family member, if you have someone in your family is a widow, it's your responsibility first. That way, the church is not burdened with all of these widows who could get help from other people, and they can focus their attention, their money, their funds to the church can be used on the people that really need it. These widows out there that have no one. They're totally desolate. And I think here you can also see in this verse, you see a difference between individual duties and what God has, and duties that God has ordained for the church. So if we as individuals go help someone, that's not the church doing it. Some people, I think, have the belief is if I personally give money to someone, is that kind of like, since I'm a member of the church, is that like the church helping someone out? But no, it's not. You can see that dividing line in this passage, I think. Individuals can do certain things that the church as a whole, out of its funds cannot be. Anybody have any questions, comments? That's all of our material. That's all of our verses this morning. Okay. Yeah, if you didn't hear that, Darren was saying that the benevolence is a work of the church, but it's not the work of the church. And he used a good example about a hospital. Its job, its role is to heal the sick, but it has fire extinguishers in it. So it doesn't mean that a hospital is now in the job, in the business of putting out fires necessarily, but if that arises, it has that capability to put out a fire. So it's the same way the church has the capability to, God has given us this avenue of helping these people that are in need. Right. And I don't know if the day we're living in, maybe we, you know, it would be a rare occasion where, you know, a lady outlives everyone in her family. It'd almost have to be a tragic accident or something like that happen, you know, in the way we have, especially in this country, I guess you could say, as far as our good medicine, good capabilities like that. Have what they need. Any other comments? That will be it for tonight. I think we covered the latter half of chapter 5 on Wednesday night, talking about a relationship with the elders and jump into chapter 6 a little bit also.